Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Beyond to the Matrix tonight. This is Patricia Corey welcoming you to my show. I have an amazing guest with me tonight, Sue Allen, who has authored a book called Spirit Release, which I adore and love and am very excited about. So we'll have her on in a minute. But before I bring her on, something's come up that I want to share with you, and I'd like to ask your support. You may have heard that Greenpeace has brought their ships up to the Antarctic. I'm sorry, I've got my directions confused. They're fighting for the whales because Japanese ships are in sanctioned breeding grounds, and so Rainbow Warriors are up there trying to hold back these ships. They need our help. Please, if you care about the whales and what's being perpetrated against them, write to the Japanese government. Help Greenpeace. These are people who are dedicated warriors. Whatever you can do, I would be greatly warmed in the knowing that I've helped them reach you and get some support. So please, please, please find out what Greenpeace is up against and do what you can as a voice, a communal voice, to help save the whales. Okay, that's my plea for the morning. I'd like to go on and introduce wonderful Sue Allen. Her biography is really awesome. She has been accredited by the National Federation of Spiritual Healers, the College of Psychic Studies. She has a diploma in analytical psychology and healing, a master's in psychology and healing. She's an accredited member of the Spirit Release Foundation, and she now brings us this wonderful work, Spirit Release, a practical handbook, and I can't wait to talk to her about that. Welcome, Sue. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's certainly been quite a lead-up. Now we're going to pick your brain. Most of my readers know that I've been a spirit healer for over 30 years, and have encountered and worked with so many entities and attachments, and there's so much mysticism about her. And so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is to help people understand what we're really talking about when we talk about attachments and all these astral beings, and how important it is for them to clear their fields and to protect themselves energetically, and what they can do in this vast astral field of spirits. So, without any more hate waste, let's move on to finding more from you about the book. Let's start. I'd like to ask you, what brought you to write this book? I'm sure it was very challenging.
Yes, you can say that. I've been working with people who have various attachments and various spiritual problems for many years, and I have learned to specialize in the subject of spirit release. So it brings together the healing and the psychic and the psychotherapeutic nature of what I do. And I was teaching a one-year course at the College of Psychic Studies in London, so I was having lots of students asking lots of very interesting questions, and then I was having up clients wanting to understand what had happened to them, why it had happened to them, how it had happened, and all of those sorts of things. And in the end, after several years of working in this, I thought, well, there's so many people out there that let's try to answer some of these questions. And also, the other thing that I wanted to do was to try to take the fear out of it, because fear weakens us. So if I could take the fear out of it and normalize it and bring some of that sort of normality into it, taking the mythology out of things, because I think we see so much on the TV that is had the Hollywood effect, shall I say.
I do want to say that also a lot of psychic workers throw this language around very easily and condition people by saying, oh, God, I see an entity, or, well, that's because you've got attachments. And I think that a lot of times that is mal-advised and people can become conditioned by situations that don't even exist. So yes. I think it's really important to help people get clear about uh-huh. what we mean, what yep. is psychic attack, how do you get a spirit attachment, and go all the way on to as far out as we want to go, like possession and all those.
Yeah, sure.
I call them ooky areas because I like to keep a sense of humor when we talk about these things.
Humor helps.
I think humor is really important so we don't take ourselves too seriously when we talk about such serious matters.
Yeah.
Let's start by talking about, first of all, how did you know that as a psychic, when did you first encounter your first entity? I can remember mine vividly, but I'd like to know about yours.
I've been psychic from a very small child. So even as a small uh-huh. child, I would see people in the bedroom and I'd hear them and so on. And at that age, obviously, it's quite frightening because you can't really understand it and it's hard to accept. I had my, what I call my initiation, shall we say, at the age of 21, because up to that point I had seen spirits around me. Some of them were visiting, some of them were earthbound. I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference, and I certainly wouldn't have known what to do with them. And at the age of 21, I was at college training to teach, and a friend of mine came back from the library with a book on St. Augustine. And that was it. For the next 3 months, she'd brought something in that was attached to the book. And for the next 3 months, we lived through absolutely horrendous experiences. But I learned an awful lot through that. And it's from then that spirits have then presented themselves to me in various situations. And I've known a bit about how to release them. And then obviously I've trained as a healer and so on. So it's then become more... I suppose easier for me to do it.
So this entity just came through the... Do you intend to say it was attached to the teaching to the book or somehow attached... I don't know what you mean by attached. It came through the book. Would you elaborate that?
It seems to have been attached to the book. The St. Augustine that was written about in this book wasn't necessarily always a good character. So I think this entity, whatever it was attached to the book, and my friend brought it in and put it in the middle of her, onto the bed in her study bedroom. She came in to me, we had a cup of coffee or whatever as students do at that stage, and then she walked back into her room, and as she walked back into her room, she turned to me at the door and said something. She asked me a question or whatever, and when she turned back, the whole room had been trashed. Without us seeing it, without us hearing it, nothing. And all of her stuff in her study bedroom had been piled into a huge pile of clothes, books, etc., papers, coffee cups, etc.
Before your eyes.
On the floor. And this book was on top of the pile. And it started
This was before your
there.
Eyes?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty heavy-duty entity.
Oh, yes, it was. Frightened the Catholic priest, because at one point, she was a Catholic, so at one point we decided, okay, we can't deal with this. We tried to get help in various ways. And in the end, she said, well, let's go and see the Catholic priest. I know that they do this sort of thing. And we went to see him. And he obviously put us down as two female students. I'll go along with my Bible, holy water, and my purple sash. And he was in my room all of 2 minutes. And as soon as he started, the thing went for him and he ran. And refused to come back in the room. I had to gather up all of his stuff and take it to him outside the building.
How did we eventually get rid of this entity?
After we got used to living with it, it was day and night, and it was doing all sorts of things. And to cut a very long story short, what happened at the end was I was sitting trying to write an essay, as you do, with a very short deadline looming. And it was doing things like taking my cigarettes and my matches and hiding this and hiding that. And then it started to say to me, open the window, open the window. And in the end, I got quite cross with it and I said, do you want the window open? You open the window. And of course it couldn't. And all of a sudden the penny dropped for me and I thought, it needs me. It absolutely needs me. It needs me to do things for it. It needs me to feed it with my anger, with my energy, etc. And at that point, I went, okay, sunshine, you're out of here now. And I just told it and called on everything that I knew to take it away, and it went. And I think what I learned
it's important
from that...
To tell people that, you know, we... Well, of course, in my workshop, I teach people this, and I'm sure you did too.
Mm.
For starters, we love all of the wonderful tools, and I sometimes affectionately call them toys, that we embrace, like crystals and sacred objects, and God knows what other wonderful things we place on our altars and bring to our homes. And it's so, so important to clear them first.
Right, yep.
I'd like to talk to you about that. I'd like what your feeling is about clearing. For example, would you have been able to clear the book before you ever brought it into your environment?
I would now, but then I didn't have that knowledge or ability. But now, yes, I clear.
Yeah, it's kind of like after your first entity, you learn really
fast.
Yeah. It's like, you know, entity 101, the fast track to learning what to do.
Right.
So now you say you wouldn't know what to do. What would that be?
Well, most things can be cleared with just calling on the energy of the universe, the cosmos, source, God, however you want to see that, calling on light, and I use a lot of light, so I will use white light vortexes, white light discs, all those sorts of things. But I will basically call upon my team of spirit guides, etc., that work with me to remove things, to clear things for me.
And do you do this like with everything that you bring into your house?
Most things, yes.
I do too. You know. After having had the experience, I'm not quite as intense as yours, but having had, the first time I ran into an entity was during, I was giving a healing, a crystal healing, and suddenly I was confronted with this entity, and I had no clue.
Yeah.
I went back to my teacher and said, I think I'm over my head. So now, to me, it's very important that people understand when they're doing so many astral things and psychic readings and any exchange, really, it's very important to create sacred space, to call upon angel warriors and whoever you work with to encircle the space with light. And in the case of objects coming into the home, like crystals, they need to be cleared at the source before they enter.
And if you think about it, I'm often talking to people, I clear houses as well as people, and I often find things with objects. And sometimes it might just be a very beautifully hand-carved piece of wood, but the person who's been carving it has been angry while they've been carving it, so all of the anger is in it. Also, people go and they'll buy second-hand furniture, jewelry, etc., from places, and all of that sort of stuff needs to be cleared before we bring it into our home and before we use it. Otherwise, it's bringing other people's energy with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, clearing would be the first step that you recommend in your book.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. What about? Let's go a little bit deeper into the book and talk about psychic attack, because there's so much confusion about this. And in some cultures, like the Italian cultures, the Greeks, they all wear the eye to hold against attack. The Italians call it malocchio, bad eye.
Yeah.
And I would like to speak to this question of what exactly is psychic attack, whether it's intentional or unintentional.
To me, I separate psychic attack from spirit attachment and possession. My definition of psychic attack is an external energy, so something from without, outside of us, which has a negative impact on our sense of well-being. Now, if you take that to its broadest definition, that can include bright lights, noise, pollution, all of those sorts of things, which can negatively impact on our sense of well-being. And obviously, as we as healers, psychic sensitives, become more sensitive in our work, we can become more sensitive to things that perhaps we used to be able to eat or drink that we can't now and so on. So going on from that, it's a very wide definition, but you've got one end, which is like the environmental stuff that impacts on us, right the way through the other end, which is intensely intentional and is often paid. So somebody will want to attack you because they're angry or they're jealous with you, or they want to deprive you of something, and they will go to a professional and pay them money in order to do that. So psychic attack is a very wide spectrum.
And how does one protect oneself against psychic attack?
My view of protection is that basically protection to me is a heightened awareness and a deeper connection. So a heightened awareness of our own energy and what's around us, and a deeper connection to the earth and to source. And if we have that and we know in our own being that we are protected, that's the ultimate. That's what it needs. However, when I teach protection...
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I like to remind people that you are the crystal, you are the energy that you want from the amulet. It is you. It is you, you, you.
Absolutely.
And to hear you reinforce that is very reassuring to me. It's important to people that people understand that nothing can harm you if you are completely balanced, completely, your aura is well and secure in the sense of having no splits and holes and debris in it.
And the more grounded you are, the stronger your energy field will be. The stronger your energy field will be, the stronger your physical body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I teach protection and grounding, I teach the two together because I think the two are intrinsically linked. And grounding to me is about being properly in the body, not floating around, not, you know, being unable to see or be conscious of what's happening around us, but being firmly in the body. That helps the body to be well and the aura to be strong. But I teach barrier methods, what I call barrier methods. I used to work in sexual health. So I will teach people how to put bubbles around themselves or cloaks or pyramids, how to use mirror balls to reflect negative energy away from them, that sort of thing. I will talk to them about the type of crystals that are protective or the types of essences and oils that they might use, because people need a whole range of things that they can use. One technique often isn't enough, because often you'll get up, the wind's blowing in a different direction, your technique doesn't work that day. So you need to have a whole toolbox, really, that you can call upon until you get to that point of just realizing that actually, if you're fully aware and fully connected, that's all you need.
Yeah, I think that it's important to remember that it is the intention that you put into using these tools in the first place that renders them
powerful.
So often we go through the motions, we get to the point where we're just going through the motions anymore, then lo and behold, we're not getting the essence of the tools, because we're not there.
Yeah.
We're not really there, we're just walking through. And that, it's so important in life, on every level, to be clear what your intent is, so that you can have the outcome that you're looking for.
And that's all that you need.
Have you been under psychic attack?
Well, that's all that you need to deal with psychic attack, because if somebody is attacking you, rather than thinking, oh my God, they're attacking me, this is dreadful, which gives them an opening, all you need is to go, actually, I'm not going to accept that. I don't deserve it. I won't accept it. I am strong. I am protected. And they can attack you on some levels, as long as they like, without having an impact on you. However, there is the other end. There's the extreme end that I talked about earlier, where you have the paid professional, and even if you are the most protected person, etc., and you don't believe in it, they can still get through to you on some level on some occasions.
Wow, that's just hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
But people that are working on that level of dark, that level of dark energy, it's hard to believe that people are that focused on that lower vibration. And me personally, I do run into it, because we are always walking through the fields of extreme dark and light in this time. And, you know, just walking down the street in Glastonbury, dark light, dark light, dark light, all the way up.
Absolutely. Glastonbury's a prime example, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that is where, I would say that is the ultimate crossroads of darkness at, like, Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I have a few friends in Glastonbury that are listening to this interview right now. I wanted to ask you about, I just lost my question completely on this. Yeah. Have you ever experienced being under attack?
I probably in the past unknowingly. I have consciously in the recent years, because one man tried to attack me. He was attacking a number of people that I was working with. And so I was working systematically with them to clear them, to strengthen them. So even in the end, he was finding that his attacking them wasn't working quite as well as he wanted it to. So he thought he'd try and attack me instead. And I had a period of about 4 days of this stuff just coming towards me, but it would only get as far as the outside of my aura and couldn't come in to affect me. And after 4 days of this continually coming at me, I got a bit bored, so I sat down and I thought, okay, let's see who this is. And I saw the man that was sending it, and I thought, okay, that's fine. And I just said, okay, anything that is yours, I give back to you. And all of this stuff that he'd been sending to me, some of which I'd even forgotten about, all flew back towards him. And he didn't attack me after that.
And he probably stopped really quickly after
that, in general.
Yeah,
because
the mirror technique is wonderful. I'm sorry?
It was his stuff that was going back to him.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a delay in the phone time. That's why we So I was saying the use of a mirror is one. The idea of a mirror is wonderful because you are not creating any darkness by just putting a mirror in front of you and inviting the individual to receive back what he's sending.
Yes,
it's a wonderful
absolutely.
Tool, and I really recommend it, as I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Recently, I've been in a house that was it had a very, very strong attachment, a spirit there. And what happened was the owner of the house, she has a bed and breakfast, so some people, she has a part of the house where she claimed there was an entity. And I said, how do you know there's an entity there? She said, well, one night we went out and I told my husband, how strange that you closed the curtains in that part of the house. And he said, I didn't. He said, but the curtains are closed. And so they got a little spooked about it, but he went up the next day, opened the curtains, and next night they were closed again. So she went on to tell me that she finally told the spirit, all right, well, look, I don't want you over there scaring the guests, so if you're going to be around, come on in here with me.
Right.
Okay, so I was there and encountered this very nasty entity. But he doesn't want to let it go, and she's given it a name, and it keeps her company, and it's quite serious. So I was wondering, and my question for you is, if an individual is not ready to release the attachment, obviously it is not going anywhere. What would you recommend I could do to help this woman? Because she really resisted any kind of help in that moment. It's like, oh, no, don't be silly, there's nothing here.
Yeah. I mean, I think in those instances, I try the discussion from different points of view. And sometimes it's a case of saying to the person, look, this is not fair to this spirit. This spirit is obviously unhappy where it is. It's obviously stuck where it is. It needs to be with people that it loves, people that it's left behind. It's obviously, you know, out of its time, out of its place. It's, you know, it's probably upset that people are living in his house, etc., that sort of thing. And I do it from the compassionate point of view and try to get her to see it as this is not doing this spirit any favours by hanging on to it. You're actually being quite selfish, but obviously not saying that to her because that's probably going to revoke her angry response.
Yeah, well, she's somewhere between denial and I don't know. I couldn't even describe her emotions. It's a very strange relationship. But I do want to recommend to people that you don't, in the enthusiasm of the subject, start calling in spirits because they come.
Oh, yeah.
I've always told, also in my workshops to people, that I've had, for example, a woman in a workshop who said, I just want to see these things like you do. I'm dying to see something. And she told me that she sat in her bed one night and said, okay, come on in. Use me as a vehicle. And we spent 6 months trying to repair the damage.
Yeah.
Do not invite astrals to use you as a vehicle.
And also, if something presents itself as a guide or an angel, you must check it out first. You must check it out, because I find lots of people, they'll say to me, oh, I've been working with this guy, but now it's telling me to do things that I'm not quite sure are right, or I'm not happy about it, or it's making comments about other people as I walk down the street. And it's like, that is not a guide. So people need to check these things out at the beginning before they get an involvement and a relationship with this being that's arrived.
Yes, that is so important. I'm going to interrupt here to open up the line for questions. I'm sure some of you would like to ask Sue about some of your experiences. So check the bbsradio.com stream line, and we're streaming on Station 1, and you've got the phone numbers there to call in on. So this is a really good opportunity to speak to an expert. The book is Spirit Release, A Practical Handbook by Psychic Sue Allen. It's so wonderful to talk to you, Sue. You know, a lot of times I'm not comfortable talking even in groups about these things, because some people are not prepared to talk about it and get uncomfortable. But it's important to bring it out so that people know how to handle it, what to do, and how to help others that are suffering from these kinds of experiences.
Well, I think it's uncomfortable to accept that a spirit can remain earthbound after you think they've gone. And I work with quite a few mediums, and some of those are very uncomfortable with me talking about spirit release and earthbound spirits. It's an uncomfortable subject.
Indeed. And then there are, of course, people that cord to spirits, because they don't want to let them go. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think there are instances. I've had women come to me, two women came to me separately over the years, and both have said that they have fallen in love with the spirit that is with them and are married to them and have sex with them. And one of them even wears a wedding ring to show her union. I have had others who haven't been able to let the spirit go that is with them because that person committed suicide, so they feel guilty. And I think any spirit that comes to us, whether we know them or we don't know them, they will often call to us to attach themselves quite firmly. And spirits need energy to keep them going, to feed off us. So in some aspects it will help if they called into either a chakra or into an organ. And that can cause problems for that chakra or that organ, obviously, because you've got an external energy that is attaching into it.
Oh, hold on, Sue. I think we've got a caller. Who's calling?
Rosemary, Chicago.
Hello.
Hello. This is Rosemary from Chicago.
Hi, Rosemary. What's your question?
Hi, Rosemary.
Where can I get a copy of her book?
Who?
The lady.
It's published by O Books, but you will get it on Amazon.com if you're in the States.
Okay.
And any good bookshop, if you go and order it, it's Spirit Release, A Practical Handbook.
Practical Handbook.
Sue, do you have a website?
I do, yes. It's
www.SueAllenTherapies.co.uk.
Okay.
Okay, let me repeat that. It's www.SueAllenTherapies.co.uk. Did you have another question, Rosemary?
Just a shout of encouragement for people who have
I can't hear you, love.
Just a shout of encouragement for people who have two eyes open. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you on Sue's part and on mine. And to all the people that are listening, and you keep your eyes open too. Thank you for calling in. Okay, back to you, Sue. You know, I was doing a healing once with an attachment situation that was very intense, and we removed the attachment, which we will, you and I will discuss in a moment. And this person called me at 4 in the morning that night, hysterical. And when I asked her what was wrong, she said, "I know it's crazy, but at least something loved me enough to stay." You know, I'm so amazed at the human condition that we can be so desperate for love that loving an attachment or needing love so desperately that even an attachment is better than nothing.
Yeah.
It's quite an eye-opener when you work on these levels.
Yeah,
I would like to discuss with you about why spirits attach.
There's a whole range of reasons why a spirit might attach. Sometimes a spirit, I speak to lots of spirits who aren't even aware that they've died.
Yes.
So often I will have to explain to them they've died and often how they've died. So I might have to take them back to their death. And then once they realize they've passed, then it's a case of you can release them quite quickly. Sometimes a lot of spirits will stay because of their belief. So if they feel I've done something really bad, I'm going to go to hell, I'm not going. Simply not going. So a lot of, when I talk to spirits, it's a lot about education, talking to them about what's the problem and let's try and resolve the problem. Some of them stay because they've made a promise. I will always look after you. I will always be with you. Sometimes it's because they have an addiction that they're trying to continue and they feel that, you know, going on into the light isn't of interest to them. They'd rather attach to somebody, you know, who can meet that addiction for them. Sometimes it might be that they want to get revenge for their death. So there's a whole range of reasons as to why spirits might stay around and then might attach to someone.
And do you experience working with these, with them, that they are often afraid of the light? When you tell them
yes,
that I'd like to bring you, well, I've never told an entity that I want to bring it to the light, because I don't believe that that is my role as a healer. I want to bring them to their appropriate space in the universe, wherever that may be.
Yes.
And they speak about fearing the light. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, I mean, usually it's on the more dark or demonic level where there's been this myth expounded amongst their level of the astral, where the light is harmful, it will blind you, it will burn you, it's so on. So therefore it's a case, again, of demythicizing that. And when I ask for a spirit to be released, I ask it to be released to the most appropriate place for it, and from where it can't come back and attach to another human being, if that's the case. Because obviously, if a spirit belongs to the earth, then it might want to go back to the earth, and that's fine.
Exactly.
It's,
you know, it's so refreshing to talk to you because we have such a similar approach and such a similar experience. I agree with you completely, and that it's never a healer's place to send anything into the light. That is not our decision to make, as you just said and reconfirmed. So I'd like whoever's listening to bear that in mind when we are doing this work, that the light is not necessarily the place where this energy should be sent.
I mean, often with human spirits, what I do is I ask them to think of somebody that they would like to be with, and then that person usually comes forward, and that's what we focus on is, you know, this is your mother or your grandmother or an ex-old partner or somebody of that kind. Do you want to be with them? And off you go, you know. So
right, what if they bring
about
forward another living person? Would you be sending the entity to another
They don't usually bring forward another living person. Sometimes what they will do is that they'll say that they don't know who they want, and I just ask for whoever is there that's been waiting for them and loves them to come forward, and then they'll say, oh, it's my, you know, closest friend or whoever it is. So they'll tell me who it is. So, yes, I mean, that can be confusing because sometimes you'll ask for somebody to come and the person will come and they'll say, but they haven't died yet. And it's like, well, hang on, you died about 200 years ago, so they have died now. They weren't, you know. So it can get a bit confusing. But generally, there's always somebody to come and collect the human earthbound.
Mm-hmm. How about the elementals? We celebrate elemental spirits, but they can be tricky sometimes. And
yes.
I know that you addressed this in your book. Would you like to tell us a little bit about those when they get a little bit creative?
I think the problem with the creative ones is that they've often been contaminated by us, by our behaviour and all the rest of it. So I think they then can get quite mischievous. And they like particularly, I found them in houses, and they like particularly to play with young babies
mm-hmm.
and stand above the cot and all of this sort of stuff. So, but
they
you
also
can,
like
I
torment you with by little niggly things like hiding your keys.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, they like
hiding
bright shiny things.
Or moving things. I mean, really, they're very powerful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I have had a situation where I had guests from out of the country, as I live in Italy, and there's only one place where I ever keep the keys. And
mm-hmm.
we went to go. Car was packed, ready to go, no keys. And for 3 days, we searched for those keys. And finally, when we stopped searching, they reappeared exactly in that place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, friends have said, well, are you sure these guys weren't just playing tricks on you? No. We intended to go. Nobody was that intent on playing and staying at home. So what do you have to say about their ability to actually manifest physically?
I think they can manifest physically to people who are open to that, but I think it's also hard to explain to people about we have elementals that will come into our home and attached to us or play with us. And I think it's quite hard for people to get their head around that because we've been taught that, you know, the fairy kingdom and the divas of the trees and the stones and the air and the fire, etc., are all good things. And then suddenly we have them with us, taking our keys and doing naughty things like that. So we tend to get a bit confused.
You suppose they're trying to just get our attention.
Oh, I think they're having a lot of fun and sometimes trying to get our attention, but that's not necessarily their aim. I mean, I've come across some and they certainly didn't want the human attention because the human attention goes in and says, okay, you need to get out of here because this isn't your place. You go back to, you know, playing out in the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that you can confuse elemental activity with children's activity. I was called to a house once where the mother and the daughter had a big jar, cookie jar of coins that they would put their loose change in. And this coins kept disappearing out of the jar, and each of the mother and the daughter kept thinking, oh, it's the other one who's taken some money. They obviously needed some money, that's fine. And then one night they sat down and one mentioned this to the other and they went, oh, no, I haven't been taking the money, I thought you had. And that night they went to bed and in the morning they got up and all of the remaining coins in the cookie jar, which must have been a couple of hundred, were balanced on their edges right the way around the kitchen on the tops.
Yeah.
And which is very clever because they then tried to reproduce it and couldn't balance the coins on their edges. I got called in and it was actually a little boy who had lived on the street and liked all the shiny things. And when I said, has other stuff gone missing like jewellery, they said, oh, yes, you know, we've had a big problem with jewellery going. And when I said to this little boy, okay, you need to give this back now because it's not yours, all of this stuff appears. And that was a little boy rather than the elemental.
Oh, that is amazing. Did the people see the humour in that?
Sorry?
Did the people involved see the humour in it?
Yes, they did. Yeah, they found it quite frightening at the time, but they saw the funny side of it, especially when I explained it as a child. Now, I think people can see humour in that and have compassion in that. If I'd said to them, oh, no, it's a goblin or a bog out of the garden, they might have been a bit freaked out.
Yes, in fact, it's so important to help people understand that spirits and entities are basically, well, some of them are just thought forms, not really appearing as beings, but we must have compassion to try to assist them. They're lost in space, in a sense, and remove the fear, which will only attach them even stronger, really.
Yes, that's right.
In my work, I found it impossible, utterly impossible, to help people who were taking antidepressant medication.
Right.
It would feel like there was a rubber wall around them, and I just couldn't assist. And usually I could see the entities, but I couldn't assist. And whereas people with addictions like alcohol, I was able to help. And I was wondering if you've had a similar experience, or if not, how you feel about addiction and its connection to spirit attachment.
I've not had a similar experience. I've worked with people who are on antidepressants, sleeping tablets, antipsychotics, and all sorts of other medication, and I find that I'm still able to get in there if there's a spirit there and remove the spirit despite the medication. It is then a case of, if it is the spirit that's been causing the problem, then at least the person can start to reduce their medication under the direction of their doctor. And quite a number of people that I've worked with have actually managed to come off the medication that they've been on, because once we've removed the spiritual element of the problem, then they've been able to recover. I think addiction creates a big problem in terms of spirit attachment, because if there's a spirit out there who is wanting to continue its addiction to, you know, recreational drugs, alcohol, shopping, chocolate, anything else, sex, it is going to find somebody who also either has that addiction themselves already or is open to suggestion and can take up that addiction for them. And I think that it is quite hard to, even when you've removed the spirit, if it's been there for a long time and it's caused this addictive behaviour, I think the person then has to work quite hard on changing their own psychological and physiological responses, because by then the body and the mind have taken on this addiction, as it were.
Do you encounter this often?
Yes. Yeah, frequently.
I did. I found that almost all of the people that I worked with that had addictions had one or more entities attached.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is particularly problematic for the family or the partner.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what they're dealing with. And also, a lot of them would then... Do you find that when you become involved, particularly with addicted people, that the spirit either tries to attack you back, or attack you understanding that you're interfering, or attack the partner?
Yes. I mean, certainly I have had cases of spirits trying to attack me to stop me doing what I'm doing, and certainly members of the family, partners, etc., have come to me saying it does this, it does that. Even if it just, in some instances, it takes over the complete character and personality of the person, and suddenly they've got this raging, abusive person that they don't recognize coming at them. And I think that can be terribly frightening for lots of members of the family and partners and so on. And I had one woman who had received a spirit from her male partner through penetrative intercourse, and it had passed to her through that. So there are obviously dangers with this as well.
That's very interesting, because I've got someone in mind who's I've had a discussion with about this, and I know she's listening. So I think it's very important for... Would you reiterate exactly what you said about that? Through the exchange of sexual fluids. is yes. where I feel this exchange
yeah,
takes
he
place.
Had
Did you agree with that?
Yeah, he had something that was within him that passed to her during the sexual act, and she ended up with it.
And then what?
Well,
talk about a communicable disease.
Yeah, a communicable disease.
The laughter, again, is certainly not making light of these things, but just injecting humor so we keep it in a reasonable
yeah.
context.
But
I do mean that. I do mean that when we... For people that are out there having frequent encounters sexually, you need to remember that there's a lot more that can be communicated besides HIV and other disdainful illnesses.
Yeah, it can happen, certainly.
So what do you recommend in that, let's say, for protection in that instance?
I mean, I think
if you're going, if you're with someone,
it's really,
you see the addictive
really
personality...
I think
Sorry,
protection in that instance is really hard because you're being very intimate with somebody, and I've even worked with people, couples, where one person's energy, not even the spirit attached to them, but one person's energy isn't totally compatible with the other person, and so they have the sex act, and the passive partner, shall we say, is affected by the dominant partner. And I talked to them about protecting themselves, etc., beforehand, but because of that close intimacy, it's actually quite difficult to do that. So I think, again, it's coming back to intention. It's coming back to, I will only accept positive energy exchange with this person. And
yeah, the problem is, it comes to the fact that a lot of people, I mean, if you're putting yourself into a relationship with someone who's addicted and can be abusive, then you are already not... living that talk.
Yeah.
Not looking at the highest vibration, or you wouldn't be allowing yourself to become involved in an abusive situation.
Oh, I think certainly if you've got the added problems of abuse, addiction, and all the rest of it, then I would say you're not looking after yourself and that you need to do something about keeping yourself safe, whatever that might mean to you.
Indeed.
But yes.
Okay, before we... Let me just reiterate, the name of the book is Spirit Release, really an excellent book. It's called Spirit Release, A Practical Handbook by Sue Allen, who is with me tonight. Let's swing to the light now. And as we get nearer to the end of our time together, I would like to talk about working with your guides, angels, and ascended masters.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a general question, huh?
Yeah. Well, I think I think in this work, we cannot do it on our own. So I work with a team. And in the beginning, years ago, when I first started, I used to ask for a specific guide to be with me or whatever. Now, what I do is I just ask for the most appropriate and highest beings of light to be with me, and then they sort out who comes. So I can be working with a range of guides, angels, ascended masters, and they sort out who is needed. But obviously, if a new one turns up, then I need to be able to recognize that, and I need to be able to test them, check them out fairly quickly to make sure that I'm not inviting something negative into my energy field to work with me.
Yeah, I think once you put that for the highest good of all concerned in there, like you said, they do sort it out.
Yes,
it's just
absolutely
wonderful knowing that we have so much help from so many levels, and that despite what we're talking about and the potential dangers and darkness, nonetheless, we have our guides and angel beings and masters assisting us all the way.
And
this is part
beautiful.
Of just being in service.
And the beautiful thing with that is that every single person on the planet has at least one of those guides or angels with them at all times.
Indeed. For those of you who, just today I spoke to someone who said she feels so alone, and just remember that your guides never leave you. They're always there for you. Never feel alone. The book, again... Sue, I'm just delighted that you organized yourself with all the work that you're doing to be able to gift this book to the healers and regular readers who need this information. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, and it's available from O Books in all of the bookstores and Amazon.com. You're going to want this one on your bookshelf, Spirit Release, A Practical Handbook. Oh, boy, we're almost at the end of our time, and it feels like we've just begun.
Yes.
Are you giving individual sessions, Sue?
I do, yes. I work from home, and I work at the College of Psychic Studies in London, and sometimes I'm able to do distant work, so regardless of where the people are in the world, sometimes I'm able to do it remotely for them.
What determines if you can do a remote healing?
If it's what I call a true possession, then I probably wouldn't be able to, because that needs a hands-on. But normally, if that people have spirit attachments, so people around, spirits around them, or even in their house, I can usually do it remotely. But I get a brief synopsis from the person, and usually I can tell very quickly if I'm going to be able to do it remotely or not.
Have you ever run into a situation that you could not release? Spirit that would not go?
Yes, on the odd occasion. Because I'm a member of the Spirit Release Foundation, then I tend to have other people that I can refer on to, because sometimes it's a case of just knowing somebody that uses a different method to me that might be able to come at it from a different angle.
And I'd like to know more about that foundation. Is it based in London?
The Spirit Release Foundation is based in London, but it has an international membership, and that they have a website, which is www.spiritrelease.com, and there's a list of practitioners on that site.
Spiritrelease.com.
Yeah.
That's another important email URL to put on your files, folks, spiritrelease.com. I would like to get in touch with them and see what I can do to become involved as well. Do you have any other guides or particular things you want to share with us before we say goodnight?
I think the main thing that I go on about all of the time is grounding your energy, keeping your energy nice and clear and clean, and protecting yourself. And I think if you could do those three things on a daily basis, then that will help people enormously to get on with their daily life and be safe.
Indeed. And how about helping people recognize when others have got situations of attachment or in all of its forms? What do you recommend to people?
Yeah, I think that's very important. In the book, I've been very clear about how you might recognize it in yourself or in other people. So I've gone through the types of symptoms that might be established and so on. And also in the book, there are ways of lots of techniques of how to deal with it, so how to get rid of it, how to clear your energy, and if all else fails, where to go to in order to get help.
And before we go, can you just give us an idea of some of these symptoms?
Signs and symptoms, often people will say, I have behavior or feelings or thoughts that they're not mine, I'm not in control. Tiredness is the absolute classic, that people feel very tired, very exhausted if they've got a spirit attached to them. They might find that they behave in a way that is different, or other people might recognize that suddenly there's a switch in behavior or mood that is very sudden, and you think, hang on, where did they go?
Yeah, lots of moody. I would say we used to call people mooey when they had these big switches, but
yeah,
more and more you can see people just going black and white in an instant.
Yes, and I think
that
some
would
of the symptoms
definitely something to be aware of.
Yeah, some of the symptoms are physiological, so you might have illnesses, you might have marks appear on the body, there might be pain. One man I dealt with had a tapeworm that wasn't his, that belonged to the spirit. So there's all sorts of things that can manifest.
Yes. Oh, I could talk to you for much more than an hour. I'm hoping that I'm going to see you in London, because I think we have definitely got to meet.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, I'm going to look for you, and I guess it's time to close. I hate to do this, because the time has just flown, and it's so wonderful having someone with your experience on the program. Will you come back?
I will, yes. I'd love to.
Okay. I'm sure everyone will be delighted to have you back, and we will plan that a couple of months down the road.
Great.
So I'm sadly going to say goodnight for the moment to psychic Sue Allen, author of Spirit Release, A Practical Handbook. It's been a wonderful interview, and thank you, Sue, for sharing the aspects of your work and your life work with us. That's
thank
it for tonight, folks. Don't forget, it's Beyond the Matrix, asking you to get out of the box of convention and look beyond the matrix. Thank you for being here. Don't forget, my website is www.SyrianRevelations.net. I need your support. Please get out there, tell the people about the work we're doing here, trying to balance these energies of our beautiful planet. Thank you. And next week we will have Jim Humble on. He'll be talking, if you heard the interview with Russell Altman, about Morgellons and the use of Nutrisilver to fight that, let's call it, disease. Jim Humble is working with similar tools, trying to heal malaria, and he's got a lot of fascinating things to tell us. So don't miss that show, and tell other people, please. It's Beyond the Matrix, bbsradio.com. Good night, and I'll see you next Sunday.